Okay, time once again for Truth About Markets in New Zealand. Hi, I'm Max Kaiser with Stacey Herbert. For the next 30 minutes, we're going to be talking about markets, scandals, and finance right here in Christchurch, RDU. Hey, it sounded so good there for a moment, didn't it?
It sounded promising.
It did. It had a promising lift to it. First few seconds. Like, wow, this is going to be great. But I couldn't hold it for more than 5 seconds.
You can't whisper that loud because we've got this. We use this blue mic.
Yeah.
And
blue ball.
It is a fantastic mic, but it does record kind of quiet.
So oh,
you gotta,
yeah,
you
yeah.
do have to, when you whisper back here, people can't hear it.
Okay, baby.
But I saw some bad news that's bad for this side of the world.
Okay, tell the people.
That's China.
Okay.
China's been, you know, The existence of China has lent this perception of immunity from the global crisis, on at least immunity for Australia, New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, China's chief auditor warns mounting local government debt a risk to economy. So Liu Jia, the head of China's National Audit Office, said the financial crisis had left some Chinese provinces with serious debt problems. He said, quote, the scale is large and the burden is quite heavy. Chinese provinces are in some cases equivalent in size to major European countries and run with a degree of fiscal autonomy. The southern province of Guangdong, for example, has the same population size as Germany. However, provincial budgets have been classified as state secrets until now, and this is the first time that China has disclosed the level of local government debt. Mr. Liu said the ratio of debt to disposable revenues at some local governments was over 100%, and in the highest case, it was 365%. So, if it sounds like they're in a worse situation than Greece.
Right. So usually we get those numbers on a national aggregate level. Now they're breaking it down for regions.
Well, that's correct because, you know, it's the equivalent of looking at the states in the U.S.
Right.
You know, if all the states, and there are something like 36 states in the U.S. that are allegedly bankrupt,
mm-hmm.
and if they blow up, then it leads to a bigger national crisis.
Right. So, therefore, the big driving engine for New Zealand economy was China. China looks like it's on the ropes, and if this is bad for New Zealand, I guess, is what we're saying.
That's correct. Also, you know, the Chinese national government is very fanatical about keeping order because they do have an unruly population of well over a billion people.
Yeah.
So, are they more likely to, you know, commit resources towards, you know, quelling their own population and bailing out their own population than in, extending loans and money and stuff, putting money into the New Zealand and Australian and African economies.
Right. Well, they've got that huge Forex reserve. Now they got the reserve of money, roughly $3 trillion. Most of that are U.S. dollars. And so how are they going to use that? They already had a $700 billion stimulus package, which apparently did some interesting good in terms of creating shovel-ready jobs, as it's called, you know, putting people out there to build another empty hotel or a vacant highway. And they've been doing, now they've got, they have trillions, you know, in reserves. So some are speculating that they could get involved in this global chess game by allowing their local currency to appreciate, which would give the local people increased purchasing power. And instead of trying to be a big export powerhouse, they would be a big domestic powerhouse internally.
Well, here's some more quotes from this article. Mr. Xi has warned that local governments have also succeeded in rapidly funneling large amounts of debt off their balance sheet and into public-private investment vehicles.
Oh, is that in the UK?
No, this is China.
Oh, China, right.
I'm just amazed at how fast... they totally just... That whole industrialization process lasted, what, 10, 20 years, and they've just skipped on to advanced Ponzi casino gulag model.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And they're now forecasting government debt, I guess national government debt, to hit 96% of gross domestic product infrastructure projects continue to eat up cash and produce negligible returns. The worst case is, quote, the worst case is a pretty large-scale financial crisis around 2012. The slowdown would last 2 years and maybe longer, he added. The U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio is close to 90%, while Greece's is 130%. So if China's is going to hit 96%.
Well, I mean, that's deflationary, isn't it?
It's deflationary, but it's also bad for the likes of the U.S. and U.K., who allegedly China's been buying their bonds and supporting their debt problem.
Right.
Like, I say allegedly because who knows? A lot of them. You know, these guys are all coordinating the fake economy, the fake Ponzi scheme, and they all pretend that they, they're buying each other's debt.
Right. And so the case for a global deflationary crisis builds anon. Is that the correct use of that word, anon?
Why not? Even if it's not, you can just say you're Shakespearean.
Right. Yeah, I think, well, that's right. Well, of course, anon would be like, I will see you later then, anon. I think it means like, see you later, anon, later, dude. Or in France, they'll say, quoi même.
Or you could just say it's an abbreviation for anonymous.
Uh-huh, you could say that, yeah.
And I was just talking about anonymous buyers of debt who turn out to be the Norman Bates.
Anon.
Anon.
So, well, this is all very troubling if China is just another indebted, deadbeat, loser nation, like the Europeans and the Americans. Well, New Zealand, obviously, is... I see the New Zealand dollar is starting at 71 cents. So this is, middle of the recent range, I think, more or less.
Yeah, so what's that about?
So it doesn't appear as though the...
Mrs. Watanabe, what's she doing?
Mrs. Watanabe, what is she doing? As far as the carry trade, is she still buying New Zealand dollars? I guess so, because they have a higher yield.
Yeah, but a lot of people took those things off when everything went volatile, honey.
Yeah. Let's get back to this deflation situation here we're talking about. You know, I saw that in the Financial Times are starting to talk about threat of deflation. Interest rates in America, they said, we can't raise interest rates right now because of deflation. China's saying we got debt deflation in the cards coming your way. European banks are going through debt deflation. Japan has been in deflation for 20 years and not going to change there. The Middle East has a real estate crash, and Qatar, another Abu Dhabi, they're going through their own problems. The demand for oil, obviously in a huge global deflationary period, is not going to make the price of oil go up. The only thing keeping the price of oil up is the fact that you've got peak oil and there's less of it around. You've got ecological disaster in Louisiana. That's deflationary.
In terms of the oil, China is adding new cars to the road all the time. There's a crisis in the OECD nations, or the Western nations like the U.S. and Europe, but there's no crisis yet in China.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at this chart of the New Zealand dollar here. I guess on this news, it did crash.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, that's a pretty big move there from 71 and a half down to 70 and
yeah,
a half.
But look, it's like up and down, up and down, up and down. Because everybody's still jittery. Everybody is still in their bull mode. People still have faith in the global banking, central banking Ponzi scheme. Everybody still wants to make their, they want to flip their stuff.
Well, yeah, you had to, we'll be right back after this. That was a good break.
That was like a very weird exit to the last part of the show.
That was like a little computer cut in, like an automaton. We're back. We're talking about deflation. Now, we've been talking about deflation since 2008. Now, let me give you my little encapsulated history of this.
Okay, give
curious,
it to us.
If you're curious about it. You had, I use Peter Schiff as kind of the narrative that people know and understand. He's a very popular YouTube guy, and he's on TV a lot, and he's made great calls. So his whole crash-proof scenario of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac collapsing and there being a deflationary collapse or a credit collapse starting in 2007 and going into the beginning of 2008 is absolutely correct. Money supply increased dramatically. Remember, they no longer reported M3, the broad aggregate of money in the U.S., and but you had John Williams over at Shadow Stats create a synthetic M3, and you saw that M3 was exploding wildly. This, again, fit in with Peter Schiff's idea that the response from the government would be to flood the system with money after the credit bubble burst. But then at around mid-2008, you had the credit supply start to shrink, and you had the beginning of what we're actually in now, which is deflation. And in a deflationary environment, you've got a relatively stronger dollar, and you've got people who are still buying government bonds and still preserving their purchasing power in the U.S. government bond market. But at around 2008, the primary trend was asserting itself as deflation, and now you've got more and more mainstream press reiterating that the threat to the economy is deflation, and there's yet to come some more major bank failures. So all the bailout money didn't stop that.
Well, the other thing I want to note is after the first Great Depression, you had the oligarchs at the time, like J.P. Morgan, were able to buy up huge chunks of assets with their cash because cash is king during a deflation. But I'm wondering if this go round, the global banking system and the oligarchs, there's just more of them. It's like the Saudi fiat royal family. There's 5,000 princes in the Saudi kingdom. Mm-hmm. Are there just too many oligarchs to effectively plunder?
Hit peak oligarchy?
Yeah. I mean, don't they have to get rid of some of the oligarchs because they're going to cause inflation by they all have cash, but they're going to cause inflation when they buy, the Empire State Building and all our bridges and roads and stuff. There's only so many assets to go around to the oligarchs, and maybe they have too many oligarchs.
Well, they certainly did back in France during the 18th century.
Yeah, well, but I'm talking about civil war between the oligarchs, because that was one thing we predicted like 3 years ago before the crash, where the millionaires versus the billionaires.
Oh, yes.
And the trillionaires versus the billionaires. So they would start topping each other, like whacking each other.
So you see open warfare break out in the Forbes 400. So the Forbes 400, and let's say the Forbes 1000, the 1000 richest oligarchs in the world go to war with each other for control of the remaining assets.
That's great. Well, in order to avoid inflation as well.
Right. That's right.
They need to divvy up the empire, but they don't want to have to compete. They don't like competition, we know.
So after the oligarchs engineer this latest round of deflation by murdering a few banks, they'll go after themselves.
Well, exactly, because that's what always happens in any of these sort of situations. Once everybody works together you rob a bank. It's a classic story. You see it in movies all the time. Mm-hmm. 5, 6, 7 guys come together. They decide to rob a bank. By the end of the movie, they've all shot each other.
Yeah, yeah, Reservoir Dogs comes to mind.
Yes.
Well, here's a story from New Zealand. Stressed out city executives looking to get away from it all have the chance to buy their own rural village in New Zealand, complete with a pub and a population of 40 people.
Wow.
Otira, a hamlet on the rainy west coast of New Zealand's South Island is on the market for $715,000.
US dollars.
The current owners, Bill and Christine Henna, bought the rundown village in 1998 after passing through and feeling sorry for it. Christchurch-based newspaper, The Press, reported on Friday. All right.
So they felt sorry for a village.
Yeah. They paid $56,000 for it.
So they're a Ponzi scheme. This is a Ponzi scheme. So these Bill and Christine Henna are running a Ponzi scheme. They're hoping to find a Ponzi who will buy this sorry village. Mm-hmm. They bought it for $56,000, U.S. dollars, in 1998, and now they're trying to flip it for $715,000. Well, Bill and Christine, you know what? There's a thing called deflation.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you $30,000 for it, okay?
Yeah, exactly. We've got a firm bid at $30,000, you freaking Ponzi schemers.
Well, go down. I want to read more of that. Don't just go off it. Max has an attention span of a gnat.
Look at those comments.
So they paid $56,000 for the hotel or pub, whatever you want to have it. It's a pub during the day, and then you sleep on the chairs.
You change the sign outside from hotel, and then you change it to pub.
School. It includes a school, a railway station, a town hall, and 18 houses, making up the village near Arthur's Pass National Park that dates back to 1923.
What kind of school could it be with 40 people in the entire town? And 39 of them old geriatrics.
And only 18 houses. The village developed when the Otira Railway Tunnel was opened and during its heyday was home to about 600 workers and their families. But the couple, now aged in their 60s, say they no longer have the energy to run the hotel. They're asking for $715,000 for the hotel. We need someone to build it up again. There's a lot of potential and opportunity, Christine Henna told the press. Well, Christine and Bill, like we said, we'll offer you $30,000. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, we're going to create our new utopian village there in New Zealand, the Max and Stacy Village. We'll populate it with listeners to our various shows, and we'll in the pub, we're going to have organic...
Cornish pasties.
Cornish pasties available for all and whoever wants them. You see, it's going to be a total wonderland of TV and pasties.
Oh, I want to change the name of the town too.
Yeah, what's it called now?
Otira.
That's a daft name.
Yeah, we want to change it. We'll come up with some names.
We need some other new name.
I want to see the names in the comments. What are the comments on this story, though? Did anybody actually comment on it?
Well, they got zero comments. I'll give you an idea of the enthusiasm.
Let's place our offer on there saying...
Type your message here.
Type your message.
Hi. My name is Max.
No, say, we have an offer from the Truth About Markets Christchurch RDU.
Mm-hmm.
And we're offering you $30,000. It's called deflation, baby.
That's right. That's right. How much are we offering?
We're offering $30,000.
All right, $30,000. It's all about deflation.
Now put USD at the end because you don't want them to think it's New Zealand dollars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, baby.
It's all about deflation.
That's right. I'm
gonna put that in there. Ponzi scheme is dead, babies. You can't find a Ponzi.
Yeah, if you want to comment to our comments, you'd go to this link, which is moneycontrol.com/India/.
Hey!
What?
It's saying that we have to log in.
Oh, that's too much work.
This is stupid. Rupert Murdoch's Times of London,
yeah.
They've introduced a paywall or yeah. Firewall. Basically, you have to log on and register. Their traffic has collapsed by 50%.
Well, he's a bonehead.
He's stupid. We're going to come back. This is going to be a more gentle exit.
All right. Gently, we shall go into this commercial break.
I think it's a music break.
Oh, yes. This music break is coming, and then we'll be back with more Truth About Markets in Christchurch, New Zealand with Max and Stacy. So please stay tuned to the following musical. Don't go away. Oh, yeah, we're back. So Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch, most overrated executive in the history of business. He bought MySpace and trashed it. Now it's completely worthless. He's going to have to write that off. He bought the Wall Street Journal right before the market ended, a 25-year bull market. And now that's going to be never worth more than 20 cents on the dollar that he paid for it. And now he has taken one of his, the only thing that was working there, the Times of London, online, put it behind a paywall. Traffic is down 50% on its way to being down 100%. It's going out of business because this guy is a bonehead.
Yeah, that's correct. And part of the reason is he's like, oh, you know, there's no, the ad revenues available online aren't very high. But of course, it's all migrating there. It will get more and more so.
The ad revenues made Google a multi-hundred billion dollar company.
That's true.
They're making Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook a billionaire, and the guy's not even shaving yet. That company is going to go public for many tens of billions of dollars. The ad revenues aren't coming to Rupert Murdoch. That doesn't mean they're not out there. It's he doesn't know how to get them because he is a bonehead. He still got his head in the 20th century. He doesn't understand the internet. He doesn't understand business and economics.
I think he has his head in the 19th century.
Yeah, exactly. He's still that Fleet Street type of guy. He's completely overrated, you know, just because he gets people to bail him out. And, okay, he's got a satellite network, satellite TV, big whoops. You know, like, that's no difficulty in selling. Why don't you offer, I just can't say less about this guy.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any love for him in New Zealand.
Yeah, well, so he's totally trashed his online newspaper there. The paper...
Well, that's good for other people, though. That's good for competition because it takes the oligarchs out of the... I mean, they're the ones walking willingly off the playing field. He's beheaded himself online.
Yeah, I mean, look, Rupert, listen to me. You're not the Financial Times, okay? It's not like your product is an editorial superior product. I mean, you know, if you're going to charge for your product, it has to have great editorial content, not run-of-the-mill, average, mamby-pamby, middle England nonsense. No one's going to pay for that. Even the Wall Street Journal now has become tabloid tripe. No one wants to pay for that either. He's trying to introduce more stories about New York to compete with the New York Times. That's not going to work either. So, you know, you can't have a popular press with page three naked girls, you know, appealing to lunchbox Britain, Marmite eating proletariat, at the same time offering paywalls for some hotsy-totsy high-end publication? No, you got to pick. Either you're a populist with the naked breasts, or you're going to, you know, you're an elitist with, like, the Financial Times. You can't be both, my friend. And you serve no one. A man who serves no one serves no one.
You can't be a populist with naked breasts. I was picturing Rupert Murdoch.
He's got those moobs.
Getting his moobs out.
He's got the moobs. And, and it's just not working for him.
That's, you know what, that's the best thing, by the way, about Tony Blair no longer being Prime Minister of the UK. Because the papers, every single frigging summer, it was pictures of Tony Blair's moobs at...
what's his name's estate?
I always forget that guy's name, that awful singer. I, like, block it out of my brain.
Yeah, it's blocked out. Can't remember it. Tony somebody? No, that's his name. Tony Blair. Yeah, he's got the really unattractive moves. That's for sure.
Anyway. So, Max Kaiser, what else? We only have less than 4 minutes left.
Yeah, we have less than 4 minutes left.
So, what are you going to tell the people in the last 4 minutes? We're going to buy this village, Otero.
Yeah, we're going to buy the village.
What are our economic policies for Otero? How are we going to make this a thriving center of New Zealand economy, a major player in the world economy?
Legalized pot.
Yeah, that's not going to do it because Amsterdam is legalized pot and it's just a bunch of, you know, drunken Brits you're going to attract who just go there for, like...
All right, I got it. I know what I'm going to do. I got it. I got the plan. I'm going to, as the, first of all, I'm going to secede from New Zealand and become my own nation state.
Okay.
Then I'm going to offer economic citizenship to anybody in the world who wants to escape the tyranny of countries like America. So for $5,000 to $10,000, you can become an economic citizen of.
You're going to take dollars, or would you rather have gold?
Are
you
going to
have
a gold? Equivalent. You know, the $10,000 and all equivalents. And then don't worry about what I do with your money. You just worry about giving me your money. And then you can become an economic citizen of my new city state, which is the refurbished town, which has been rechristened this new country. And I'm going to bring in $10 to $20 billion right there, because people are going to be coming to this town to escape the tyranny of their local governments, and they don't want to. And then we're also going to do a sister deal with Iceland. They're going to take all of their work in turning themselves into a free press zone. We're going to mimic all that work that they've done in their parliament to become a free press zone. So we're going to have a free press economic citizenship program for folks who want to be free of press tyranny and want to be free from the military budgets of various tyrants. And we're going to be a fastest growing economy in the world. And then when I get a certain critical mass, I'm going to buy the entire country of New Zealand in a leveraged buyout, which will be financed by my residents, who will own a piece of the country that they live in. And there'll be a new website called NewZealandOwner.net, and it'll be your own personal slice of heaven, as articulated by my crack team of financiers and market makers and economists that will seek the world global reach of a global New Zealand-based hedge fund that'll be dedicated.
So you're already envisioning empire. You're already becoming a tyrant on
yes,
the global stage.
That's
jeez,
right.
Max, that doesn't even take long for it to degenerate.
I'm doing it for my people.
Oh, that's what they all say.
My people. My people. I love my people.
Uh-huh. That's what they all say.
Give me all of your money and I'll give you twice as much back.
Oh, geez.
My people.
You're like encountering the Buddha on the side of the road.
Yes, indeed.
You turn into a tyrant. So, okay, obviously we can't bioterror. People are going to keep us out now.
No, the people are going to want us. Remember, they tried to elect me president of Greece just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, now look what happened.
Selling off their islands.
Exactly.
Told them, I warned them, I said, you got to get active or you're going to end up losing your islands to these tyrants.
You know, we're going to have to say goodbye now.
Okay. I guess that's going to do it for now. Until next week, Max and Stacey on Truth About Markets saying, bye, y'all.